mostly about types of clarity and questions, because we are not auditor generals. And after that, we will deal with the bill, the private members' bill, the first amendment bill, the Office of the Auditor General. After your presentation, if you feel like leaving, you will be excused. But there's nothing that stops you from staying, but also stay. Right. Can we go straight to... Do we have any apologies, honorable members? Any apologies? The apology that we received here is for honorable music. And then we don't have any other apology. Then we go straight to item number 3. Over to you, Auditor General.
Thank you, sir. My name is Mr. Tomo. From the Auditor General, my name is Daniel Kessam, which is going to be the presentation. This is the capacity building presentation of the use of title 6. May I first thank you to introduce the new member to our committee at the Auditor General, and also to help the members with their responsibility for oversight and accountability. If the presentation does seem simplistic and said a lot about what you know already, please don't be offended, because we are departing from a position of the culture which I feel that people don't care about them, so that it takes everyone with us. Thank you for the presentation. We start with our certification process, which is taken straight from the Constitution, which says that the Auditor General has a constitutional mandate, and that the Supreme Court Constitution of South Africa is to strengthen our country's democracy by generating oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through auditing, thereby improving public confidence. The audit starts with this promise when we make presentations as we have it to remind everyone about our responsibilities as the Auditor General for the country. For us, this is very important. The purpose of this presentation is, as I said, to provide the other parliament with necessary information and guidance on the role of the Auditor General of South Africa to enable them to effectively execute their oversight. This is the content of our presentation. I will give you number 1 and number 2. And my colleague will give you number 3 and number 4. Number 1 and number 2. Number 1 and number 2. Is the oversight role, and then number 2 is the audit mandate and the process. Going to the oversight role, we look at the oversight role, we look at combined assurance and access the after contribution to oversight. If you go to the next slide, this is the slide that shows the big picture of what the oversight responsibility entails. We see that it has basically four defined areas, starting with the strategic planning, and then the budgeting and operational planning, implementation, in-year reporting, and year-end reporting. Oversight revolves around those four different phases that take place in the implementation of the budget and the reporting for the year. Starting with the first area, that is the strategic planning, which was after a good question from the slide, which could be asked by the oversight body, or which tries to address what the oversight body should be looking at. As far as the strategic planning is concerned, Because question is the subject that in that which is basic requirement for objective, which is the third question that you should look at when you deal with a strategic planning. When the strategic plan is presented before you by each department or entity, that is the important question, whether what they present to you is in line with the presentation. You need to ensure that the strategic plan and strategic initiatives are aligned with the government priorities, national plan of action, and medium term experiential framework, the white paper, etc., all those quality documents that the department seeks to achieve. That should be the situation that you compare those to the strategic plan that is presented before you to see if the plan is actually addressing those areas that it is supposed to address. Acquire what or identify the challenges in meeting the strategic objective, the initiatives to address them. Look at the strategic plan to see if the initiatives that are in the plan to meet the requirements that they seek to address. Also evaluate how that step will be measured. And please look at the indicator. How is the pattern going to measure it itself to see that it is on the right path to meet the objectives that are supposed to meet in terms of the strategic plan. The strategic plan will be the 5-year plan that is implemented annually by means of the annual performance plan. So that is the type of question so that the participant incentive is aligned to the requirements. Then the next phase is that of budgeting. When the participant has been approved, then the participant has to budget. The participant has to prepare the annual performance plan and also has to budget for each year of implementation. The questions we ask regarding the budget preparation includes if the budget aligns with strategic plan, has adequate resources to allocate to the priority area, are there budget constraints and how are they being dealt with. Also, focus needs to be made on changes in budget from 1 year to the other. So in some major changes, you know how much we provide for each year compared to how much was provided for each item in the previous year, for example. The next area where oversight is needed is the area of implementation and monitoring. When the budget is approved, the budget has to implement the budget, and the process has to monitor throughout the year. Question that we asked includes the departmental standing on the right track and in line with the strategic plan priorities, the management evaluate monthly and quarterly reports, the action plan exists to address all the findings and improve financial management and accountability, are there designed, implemented, and maintained internal controls which are relevant to financial and also non-financial information. Our procedures in place to identify, prevent, and detect fraud. Our adequate governance arrangements in place and are very effective. And when we talk about governance, we are preparing mainly to internal bodies and audit committees, which are the outside bodies within the department. Then the fourth area of where oversight is needed throughout the year, the set of reporting, which comes towards the end of the year. Actually, it happens towards the end, but it's mainly intensified at the end of the year when the annual report needs to be prepared. The relevant areas where the oversight is needed to exercise, include looking at the area of keeping management accountable and determining whether there is compliance with reporting responsibilities as set out in the PSMA. The PSMA does set out the responsibilities for reporting, which guides the department as to how they should report annually. Compliance with Parliament's Appropriation Act when the budget is passed, it is passed in terms of the Parliament Appropriation Act, which determines how the budget is to be spent, the different areas in which the budget is to be spent. So when you look at the actual report at the end of the year, you need to interrogate whether the actual expenditure has been in line with the what was appropriated for the budget was approved, and whether deviations, whether those deviations have been properly approved in accordance with the treasury requirements. Also, you need to look at the effective and efficient utilization of resources to see what the reported expenditure, for example, whether it has been the resources have been acquired effectively and efficiently. You also need to review the annual report of the department for the entity, including the audit report, and consider both the financial and non-financial information presented. The annual report will include the audit report, which is the report that we have prepared after auditing the financial that we received before us. Including any audit report will be our findings as to the compliance with the reporting requirements that the department needs to comply with. So if you do look at the our audit report, you should highlight those areas where we have made some findings as to compliance or non-compliance with the reporting requirements. So those are the areas that you need to look at also. Those are the four different areas of the oversight. Let's move to the combined assurance model. Unfortunately, this does not show the full slide, but if you look at the copies of the presentation, or for now, now the change for that. This is the combined assurance model, which looks at the three different levels of assurance. The first level is that of maintenance assurance. The second level being that of the oversight assurance, second level of assurance, and then we have got the independent assurance being the third level of assurance. If you look at the third level of assurance, that includes the denomination, accounting officer, or in the case of an entity, accounting authority, and then the executive authority, which refers to the minister. Those three form the first level of assurance because they are directly related or involved in the department operation. And that is where we look for the first level of assurance. If you look at denominations take immediate action to address specific recommendations and adhere to financial relations and internal control systems. That is the what we expect from them, from the nation. When you look at accounting officers, which is the DG, or accounting authority, which applies to an entity, we hold those that hold officials accountable on the implementation of international laws and report quarterly and annually. That is their responsibility, which we need to hold them to. And then the executive authority, which is the minister. The minister has responsibility as far as the department is concerned in this combined assurance model is to monitor the progress of performance and enforce accountability and consequences. That is the minister's responsibility as far as the department is concerned. And that is what we look for in the first level of combined assurance. When you go to the second level of combined assurance, looking at the oversight assurance applicable in that area, there are three areas of responsibility. That of coordinating monitoring institution, which is applied by national treasury and the premier, for example, that should apply mainly to the provinces, not so much to the national departments, although it should apply also to the national departments to some extent. Then you have internal audit and audit committee. That is the second level of assurance in this model that we look for. We have to look at for sense of responsibilities. The responsibilities include coordinating, where the policy compliance with laws and regulations and enforcing appropriate action. And that is the role of the National Treasury, for example, and the Premier in the second level. Then we look at internal audits. The internal audits is supposed to follow up on the management action to assess specific recommendations and conduct all audits on the key focus areas in the internal control environment and report on company progress. It is important to note that internal audits is not in the model part of management, but it is the body that follows up on management responsibilities and actions. Audit committees monitor risk and the implementation of commitment on collective action made by managers as well as quarterly progress on the action plan. That is the role of the audit committee that we should look for when we look at what has happened in the assurance audit. The third layer or third level is that of oversight for portfolio committees, that is your committee for government, and also for the public accounts committee. The role that we look at in this module for the oversight portfolio committees, the committee should review and monitor quarterly progress on the implementation of action plans to address efficiency. When the department comes to you every quarter, that is what you should be doing in exercising your oversight role. And the public accounts committee also exercise specific oversight on a regular basis on any report which is made in the results. That is the scope, for example, which will point the department to account based on the financial and any other reports that is before the committee. That is the combined assurance level. Then we look at the outcome contribution to oversight. What is our contribution to the core process and the office of the audit general? These are some of the areas that we get involved in. Firstly, we provide briefings to committees on audit reports before the portfolio committee compiles the PRR report that is granted review and recommendation. Of course, that you look at before the budgeting, we come here to do the rating, to provide you the information that you can use when you do that, when you provide that report. We update, we provide updates on progress of current year audit, sharing of audit risk, and status of key control when we discuss the dashboard, for example. Before the annual performance plan are reviewed, by the portfolio committee, we discuss the findings identified from the four exit audits of the CEO of the department. We look at the plans of the department beforehand and we come to address the share on our findings so that when the department comes before you, you would have a better understanding of the data that we should maybe be looking at. We act as a reaction leader during the public hearing. When the department is called for hearing, we open that invited also to come and see on the outside of the story of what we have found during our audit. We conduct roadshows after taking of the general report. When all the audit reports have been finalized, we compile the general report at the end of the period, and then the AP goes around doing the roadshow to parliament and to the different committees, telling the story of what the audit findings have been for them. Those are the roadshows that we attend to. Then we follow up on progress of implementation of resolutions. We follow up on resolutions, for example, and we report on whether they have been implemented. Interaction with the chair session, possible quarterly. We do have our meetings with the chair Okay, so the committee is quarterly. So we meet with them to discuss the process of the action plan of what has happened since the last audit and what are the issues at the time in this pattern. We assist in building capacity of members via APEC, that is the Association of Public Accounts Committee, where we get involved also for training purposes. Those are our interventions and the processes that we assist in this oversight process. Next, we have a look briefly at our mandate, the Ultra General, where we come from in terms of legislation. The fact and aiming group of legislation is that of the Constitution of the Country of South Africa. Section 188 requires that the Auditor General must audit and report on accounts, financial statements, and financial management of government institutions and report to Parliament the legislator or legislator that has addressed each of the reports. That is the first piece of legislation. The second piece of legislation, which also comes from the Constitution, is the Public Audit Act, which regulates the activities of the Office of the Auditor General. Section 20 thereof provides that the Auditor General must prepare audit reports containing an opinion or conclusion on financial statements and financial provisions, compliance and financial management, and determined objectives. Those are the three areas that the audit is going to our annual audit, and that will report on the audit report. Our audit report is the structure of the audit to report on those three areas as to the past intent of that act. The third piece of legislation is the Public Finance Management Act, the so-called CFMA, Act No. 1 of 1999, which provides for what the accounting officer needs to do, that is the department. Section 40 requires the accounting officer to be responsible for record keeping, responsibility, and for the presenting of the financial statements for the audit. So the brief for the financial statements, that's the financial audit pattern, and that's those financial statements that are submitted to us for auditing. Section 41C provides for the publication of financial statements to the Auditor General and the audit. Section 42 provides for the Auditor General to audit financial statements and submit reports to the accounting office. In addition to what is specified in Section 4 of the Public Audit Act and subject to any legislation, the AG may audit and report on the account financial statements and financial management of any organization funded from national revenue or provincial revenue fund or the municipal fund or any institution authorized by legislation to receive funds for public purpose. These are the four areas which will fit our aspiration from the Auditor General as far as the public service is concerned. Thirdly, we implemented professionalism. The four different areas should be carried out with necessary professionalism. The first area being that of robust financial and performance management system. When we talk about robust financial and performance management system, we're talking about systems that are transparent and stable. Transparent and stable reporting systems. We're talking about budgeting and planning processes. We're talking about focused information management system platform and about strong internal audit capability. This is what we refer to as robust financial and performance management system, which we aspire for to see in the department and the office of the Auditor General. We are also aspiring to see from oversight and accountability bodies the reporting to enable effective oversight, and we are looking for applying consequences for transgressions and poor performance. This is one area which where we have found major weaknesses, where there are no consequences for poor performance. If this area could be addressed, that could address a lot of the shortcomings or weaknesses of negative findings that have been made in as far as the accountability is concerned in the public sector. The third area is that of commitment and ethical behavior by all. As the Office of the Auditor General, we are looking for visible commitment by all players in the public space, demonstrated in terms of ethical behavior and professionalism. And the fourth area was that of commitment and value-adding Auditor General, looking at our own office. We are looking at the independent and relevant reporting by the AG. We are looking for value-adding input expressed by the AG. These are our aspirations at the Office of the Auditor General, things that we'd like to see in the public sector. When it comes to accountability and reporting for our office, the Office of the Auditor General is accountable to the National Assembly and has to report on the activities and the performance of its functions in terms of Section 10 of the Public Audit Act. The main accountability instrument of our office is that of the budget and strategic plan, as well as the annual reports, all of which are tabled annually in the annual in the National Assembly. The Standing Committee on the Auditor General sets to explore except in terms of Section 10.3 of the Public Audit Act oversees the performance of the audit of the Auditor General of America on behalf of the National Assembly. So this is the audit of exercises oversight from our office as well as the Auditor General, the body for which we report to Parliament. The other area of importance from our side is that of the visibility of our office beyond the mandate. Beyond what is provided in the station, we also do our best to be visible in the area. The ESCA provides the oversight for its committee to parliament and organizations with ratings on good courses and recommendations on collective measures to improve public outcomes before the entity hearing. Developing required leadership competencies through mentoring, coaching, and leadership programs and processes for effectively managing change. That is what should be our office to make sure that we are ready at the office to provide the required training. The ASCA consults widely with the stakeholders in the executive administration prior to tailoring the general report that consolidates the audit outcomes of national, provincial, and municipal. The general report are tabled in parliament and made the changes. Those are the four different areas of the ability that we have been working commit ourselves to try to effectively carry out our responsibilities. I now hand over to Jan Stilman to take us through the remainder of our conversation.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'll be dealing with the work we do from the AGSS side. The first is that the diagram, the first section deals with the regularity audit, which is mandatory. And there we verify whether there's been any omissions of information in the financial statements. And that consists of financial compliance, audit of predetermined objectives, as well as the internal audits, audit on internal controls. And all of this happens in full compliance with the international audit group standards. And then the regularity audit are supported by the information systems audit. The ESAR focuses on primarily on the control environment, and they use computer-assisted audit techniques, and they assist us with fact analysis. Then we also do three types of audits. We do performance audits in addition, we do investigations and special audits. All three of them are discretionary audits. The performance audit is performed in terms of Section 23 of the Public Audit Act. There we basically evaluate the 3 E's, economy, efficiency, and effectiveness, look at the effect of the policies that the department has implemented, not the policy evaluation. The report is a factual report, and we do not express an opinion on that. The audit is conducted by a performance auditor, and most of the time they use subject matters of subject experts, for instance, HR experts or civil engineer or whatever the case might be. And the focus is on specific government programs, projects, or management projects. Investigation, they will primarily focus on detection of fraud, crime in the public sector, and then the focus area is financial misconduct, maladministration, or enterprise. In special audits, that's mostly where we perform agreed upon procedures with regard to donor funding, etc. Another view on performance policy, the 3 E's, economy plus efficiency plus whether you split your goals or not, that will equal in then value for money, and ultimately you will get service delivery from that. Regularity audit, what you do and what you don't do. First of all, with what we do is we provide assurance that the financial statements are free from the criminal statements. What we don't do in that regard, we don't provide assurance that all applicable laws and regulations have been complied with. We report on the usefulness, right, the reliability of information in the annual report. We report on material non-compliance with laws and regulations to identify key control deficiencies to be addressed, largely linked to the items reported on in the audit report. We don't identify fraud, although we design our procedures that we've got a good chance of detecting it. But it's not our primary function to identify fraud, and we provide assurance that the service, we don't provide assurance that service delivery has been achieved. The timeline that we have in our environment, the day is the 31st of March, at least in one time, timeline, and then the 31st of July, the audit report must be signed, and then the last quarter of the current year, the year that we audit, is normally equal to the first quarter of the following year. So the dashboard, final dashboard in the final management report will be the same as the dashboard in the first quarter, in the new year. The audit of the financial statements and specific focus areas, myself already alluded to that the financial statements, the requirements in terms of the Constitution, Section 188 and Section 20 of the Public Audit Act, and the audit holds an opinion on the financial constitution in all material respects in accordance with the specific applicable reporting framework, which in this case is the modified cash standard, predetermined objectives, service delivery issues, the focus on reliability, usefulness, of performance information, and we will touch on the usefulness and reliability of performance information later. And we will see whether the targets actually set out in the beginning or actually achieved. Compliance with urban regulations, reporting on non-compliance with key legislation. Here we will focus on the PFMA federal regulations and specific sections in the Defence Act, in acting legislation. If you look at a good administration or what the clean audit is about, first of all, to get a clean audit, there must be the financials must be financially unqualified, free from material attachments, there must be no findings, no material findings on compliance with laws and regulations, and there must be no material findings on predetermined objectives. look at the difference. What is the green here? That first type is not there. It's a green type. It's unqualified, unmodified. That way, the financial statement is a true reflection and a fair view and is fairly presented in accordance with the applicable framework. Then you get an unmodified with emphasis of matter. In that case, you must emphasize the emphasis of matter. It's got a fairly presented set of financials. However, the emphasis of matter paragraphs is just to emphasize matters that's already been reported on that will be of interest to the reader of the financial statement. Then the next type of opinion would be a qualified opinion, and there the effect of any disagreements with management with regard to departures on the financial reporting framework, limitations, or disagreement with statements is not material and pervasive. That will also then that will lead to a qualified opinion that has a result of a qualified opinion cannot be expected. If you look at the next, opinion will be a disclaimer, again the fact is not there. That is where we cannot find sufficient appropriate or evidence to support or to put up in a position to express an opinion. However, in this case, the lack of documentation will have to be pervasive, and it will have to affect more than one type of transaction or account balance before you can express a disclaimer of opinion. The last opinion is an adverse opinion. The auditor disagrees with the representations made by management in the financial statements to the extent of considering that it's not a fair reflection of the financial position, performance, and the cash flow. In that case, it will be an adverse opinion. If you look at in more detail at the auditor of predetermined objectives, then we will focus on three elements. We will firstly look at compliance with regulatory requirements, the usefulness and the reliability of the performance information. On the compliance side, on the existing side, we will look at is there a proper strategic plan, is there an APP for the year, and what is actually tabled in terms of the requirements, the legislative requirements. The usefulness, there are four elements. We look at the presentation. All the information is presented in a uniform format. The measurability of the information, the relevance of the information, and the consistency of the information. On the reliability side, we will look at the validity, the accuracy, and the completeness of the information. The structure of the audit report is normally an introduction, and then the accounting officers or the accounting authorities' responsibilities. The next section is the auditor general's responsibility to indicate the opinion, and then the emphasis on matters which I've already alluded to earlier. The matters that you normally report here will relate to matters that I think you have previously that already disclosed in the financial statements, but we would just like to emphasize to the readers of the financials. So this will include a significant irregular expenditure, irregular prudent expenditure, perhaps on certain matters in the case of a public agency. On the additional matters, we will report on three levels, on report on other legal and regulatory requirements, internal controls and other reports. The third under legal and regulatory requirements will be your predetermined objectives and compliance with laws and regulations. On the internal control, we will report on three areas. leadership, financial and performance management, as well as government. Other reports, if there are any, will deal with the discretionary audit that we perform, the investigation, performance audit, and agreed upon procedures.
Mr. Stlenkamp, I think you should round up now. The time that you indicated is over. Thank you.
Okay, Chair, Honourable Chair, I've read it off. It's just a matter what we disclosed as a matter for the carry on. If you could just briefly touch on the briefing process, the tools at the disposal of the committee will be the annual report, the audit report, and the performance report, the agenda briefing, and the notes, the accounting officer's audit, and the audit committee report, the E&E, as well as the state of the nation, and the budget speeches. The briefing process has got five levels. First of all, the reporting by the department, then understanding of the mandates of the entity by the oversight, the actual review process by the AG, recommendations by the oversight committee, and then very important, there must be action plan and the monitoring of the process by the committee itself. And if you do that, that should be an effective process. The last section deals with the overview of what comprises of the annual report. There's normally general information, the format, there's information on the programs, the HR section, and then the annual report, financial statements, which includes the audit committee report, cabinet report, agency report, and the financial statements. Typically, when we do the briefing, we will give an overview of the department's performance in terms of the qualification areas for 3 years. We will also then give a breakdown in terms of the focus areas, which is on that slide. And we did use this as an example. And then what we do is link the key control efficiencies to those specific areas that we've reported on, the leadership, the first one, then financial performance management, and governance. We've also already discussed the combined assurance model. These are just recommendations as per the assurance, different assurance levels that the committee can consider on the chair with regard to the combined assurance model.
Thank you very much, Mr. and Mr. Tonga from the Office of the Auditor General. Honorable members, I have a suggestion to make here for a proposal, because this presentation formed the basis of our oversight activity. I was suggesting that we, because in our program already, we have a weekend for a 5-year strategic plan workshop. Can we extend an invitation to the Auditor General to come and do the presentation, and meanwhile give members an opportunity to go and interact with this presentation in preparation for the workshop? Honourable members, honourable Caro Burs Kosana, we are for you.
Thanks for that, because my understanding was that the NG was going to be part of the workshop. We have done that if we're going to do a preview job here and also or on the other side to do the integration. I think there were two things in that, right? So the workshop was in 2015.
Thank you very much. Another discussion? Honourable members, if that is the view of the committee, can we then thank the Office of the Auditor General and then also extend an invitation for a presentation in the workshop? Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honourable members. Can we then move to our second item? The process is that Honorable Meunier, in your response, there was a presentation by the department. There was also a presentation by the parliamentary legal advisors. And then there were questions of clarity and comments. I recall that you should lead us, Honorable Meunier, in your response to say that if you still feel that the bill should be supported, then you articulate that for the committee. And then we'll hear from the committee. Over to you, Honorable Meunier.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to deliberate on the bill, which I still believe the committee should support. I think it would have a significant impact on our ability to conduct oversight of defence acquisition and therefore to ensure that the operational capability of the Defence Force is maintained. Chair, it might be just useful before we proceed for me to briefly refer to some of the arguments made in the Secretary of Defence's presentation, which I do not believe are valid. And my responses, I think, may assist in taking this forward and assisting us in our deliberation. Now, as you may be aware, the
Honourable Meunier, just the Honourable Kameda.
Sir, I don't want to share the opportunity of honorable major responding to the factors on the lead of the was wondering to comment on that and you all had a fair chance with us.
The honorable Kameda, the understanding is that Honorable Meunier needs to convince this committee to support that bill. If in his response that will help him convincing that committee, we don't see anything wrong about that. We don't want the department to respond. They made their presentation. Honorable
if the honorable member prepared to concede that he's convinced already, I'm quite happy.
Can we go on? Can we take that route? Thank you, Honorable Mayor.
I think the promotion members, the body language, we still require convincing.
Yeah.
Okay. So the Secretary of Defense, as you know, adduced several arguments, essentially arguing why the defense rules that are opposed by the
is it your cell phone, Honorable Mini? Somebody's cell phone? Okay. Go on. Oh, is the problem with the mic? There's no state security here.
About
defense acquisition project. The purpose of this bill is firstly to draw Parliament's attention to defense acquisition projects where there are major cost overruns or significant schedule slips, so that Parliament is alerted to defense acquisition projects which may be compromised and can then decide how to deal with that matter. And one way the committee is concerned about disclosing information would be for the for the relevant committee, which in this case would be the joint planning committee, to convene a closed meeting in order to drill down into the specifics about what may be wrong in respect of the specific defense acquisition project and what mitigation plan the Secretary of Defense may have in place to correct the problem. Finally, the second last argument is in respect of national security, where again the Secretary of Defense claims that the disclosure of, again, this very limited information that I propose would compromise national security. I would ask members to accept the Congress argument, which is that if there are defense acquisition projects where there are major cost overruns and where there are significant schedule slips which are compromising the SANDF's operational capability, that is in fact the threat to national security, and that is exactly the kind of information that Parliament requires in order to properly conduct its oversight. And most bizarrely, the Secretary of Defense argues that in any event, the Department of Defense reports on defense acquisition to Parliament. Now, if you recall my exchange with the Secretary of Defense during the course of last week, I pointed him to the relevant section of the Department of Defense's own defense policy, which in fact has a subparagraph dealing with parliamentary oversight, and which is very comprehensive. It sets out the fact that the Department of Defense will submit biannual and ad hoc reports to the relevant committee, will keep the relevant committee abreast of all developments, and will inform the relevant committee on all relevant stages of acquisition. Now, those of you, those of my honourable colleagues who are new to Parliament, may not know that in the previous Parliament, those reports were never submitted to the relevant committee, which is the Joint Standing Committee on Defence, in the fourth Democratic Parliament. And if you recall, the Secretary of Defence conceded as much, but then said that the reason for the parties would be happy to provide those documents to a properly constituted meeting of the Joint Standing Committee on Defence. Well, the fact is that for 5 years there was a properly constituted Joint Standing Committee on Defence, and those reports were never furnished to Parliament. Chair, then finally, for those members, and I know that there are some members that are specifically concerned about whether my private members will resolve the situation where information is disclosed in the public domain that would compromise national security. Let me assure them, A, and I'm not going to traverse this argument again, the bill specifies exactly what information should be disclosed by the Department of Defense. That information is high-level information and does not place an onus on the Department to disclose any detailed information. If the committee, as a result of these reports, is concerned about the about a particular defense acquisition project, the committee must then decide how to take that forward. One option which is available to the committee is to convene a closed meeting in order to receive a detailed briefing from the Secretary of Defense on the problems surrounding the specific defense acquisition plan. That's the first. The second argument is that this information, information far beyond the information that I specify in my bill, has already been made public in respect of some acquisition projects, particularly possibly the biggest acquisition project currently underway in the Department of Defense, which is a project called Project Fukasa, which is to develop and acquire 238 Badger armaments vehicles. Extensive information has been disclosed about Project Fukasa, which goes way beyond the information that I require in this book, and there has been no consequences for Project Fukasa. There's been national security has not been compromised, and the project has gone ahead as planned and been implemented by the Brunel group. Then finally, Chair, in closing, if members need any final convincing, the first is, as I said, members need not be concerned that information which would compromise national security would be disclosed in the reports that I require. But I finally ask members to accept that the situation that we're dealing with is very serious, and members need look no further than the judgments from the Constitutional Court in respect of the Minister of Defence versus Mattel and others, the so-called arms coordinator. The Minister herself draws the Court's attention to what, in her own affidavit, she calls procurement projects which have failed to progress timelessly. And she sets out a number of projects, many of which have been delayed by up to 36 months. And the financial cost of that delay is quantified by the minister in her affidavit as being in excess of 70 million rand. Now I would ask members to accept that having indeed my defense amendment bill being drawn, and having indeed the fourth democratic parliament being aware that there were defense acquisition projects which were experiencing significant delay, and where there were significant cost overruns, and where there was significant financial risk, Parliament could have convened and could have held Arms Corps to account and asked for hard questions, and I think that would have gone a long way to having headed off and this terrible situation that the Minister of Defence and our Department of Defence finally got it. And so, in closing, Chair, I would ask members to seriously consider this bill, because I do believe that it will improve Parliament's ability to conduct oversight of defence acquisition, and will improve, or at least ensure, that the operational capability of the SANDF is not compromised. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Meni. The commission that you are referring to, which commission are you referring to, Honorable Meni?
The commission, Chair, which I was referring to, is the current Judicial Commission of Inquiry, looking into what's commonly known as the arms deal, and is commonly referred to as the Soviti Commission. I'm happy 2 days together, not so long ago.
I want to help you to convince members to support you. The Commission on Arms Deals has not yet completed its work. Therefore, it would not be helpful for us to refer to it. Then I thought, in terms of the Constitutional Court judgment, you would have told the members that what was the reason leading to that judgment. Because I would recall, if the reason leading to that judgment is because of poor management or because of lack of legislation, and maybe that is another argument than the report not submitted. You are saying that the report were not submitted to the Joint Standing Committee for the last 5 years. Was it due to lack of management efficiency in the department, or what? Such, those are the gray areas that should be covered, and already there is an info disclosed, I understand, about Wolf Esther. What would be the basis of disclosing that information? Is it legislative or is it a leak? I think that could empower this committee to maybe to consider supporting you or the other way around. Honorable members, Honorable Bongo. You know where we are in terms of the process. You are supposed to convince these members to support the bill. Then if there is any there might be a member who wants to convince you to abandon that approach. I think we are there. The members who are going to talk now, they will be talking on those bases, either to support or not to support. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I think before us, we are two presentations that we made. One from the Department from the Department of Advice. The representative of these two, presentations is whether or not the deal constitutional or non-science. It would appear that this is not necessarily unconstitutional. But the second question is whether it is desirable or not desirable. So from where I'm sitting, that this bill is just not desirable to have in view of the fact that we already have other legislation that covers a lot of things that they're setting. But what is most strange about the bill is that initiating a bill for Parliament to can look at it together, the department must be at the center of the process, because it's the department that must oversee its processing, its execution, and its implementation. So if the department comes to us and say like, no, this thing already covers, but from where I'm sitting, Public Finance Management Act covers certain aspects. But I must be sure that the issues that are provided in one of the sections of the bill that requires that, there must be a project like a number of years, the discussion and the time when the things will be done. Are issues that constitute national security, and is that desirable that we have to put those things into legislation? But over and above, these things that are disclosed, they are already very suspect, if you understand the specification. It may be very simple for anyone to tell you that, okay, you can do that. This is how I'm suspecting the document. Give me a budget, sir. That's saying you're giving me a budget, maybe 5 million. You're already sending me the issue of national security. You don't know the national security, but the risk is that if you say 5 million, even if what one is to purchase was 2 billion, you're already sending me the people who are now getting to this space to say, all the money that you're purchasing is almost 5 billion, not the 2 billion that the equipment may cost. So that alone is somewhat interesting to the reliability of this thing. And say, one part of it, I think, this thing goes to the justification of already existing legislation. So as Parliament, we should be wary of dealing with over-legislating. We can't just over-legislate when we already know as Parliament thinks that we need to qualify all the laws, because we have a lot of different laws of legislation in the country. So let's qualify them under one group, so that why won't you follow them properly? So this one goes to over-legislation. And the issue of national security would be highly compromised by the this thing. So I remember when they arranged that this thing was to be anyone. And we as a committee, I don't think we need our children to get into that space. Anyone is may be tantamount to micromanaging the department itself. Because our legislation provides that we need oversight. The department to set all the systems on its own, when our role is to make sure that we oversight where there are weaknesses, we will have to make sure that we reduce the systems of the oversight. But we can't just over-legislate unless we have to do it. So, see, I know that this bill must be
Honorable Munisi, Honorable Skosana, you follow.
Thank you very much, Chair. I would also like to compare with my colleague, Honorable Bond. Chair, I think after the presentation by the department and our Canadian legal advisor of last week, I just thought that Honorable Yabahel will be convinced that the bill is undesirable and is not needed. Since the Secretary of Defense made it very clear that the bill will compromise the operational capability of our defense force, and there is also a problem in its constitutionality, I think as a committee, there is no way that we can allow this bill. Also, checking on its financial implications and the national security, because most of the aspects that are mentioned by the honorable member are already covered. I can just say the education of what we have to do. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, let me thank you for the introduction of the bill and the response of the department. Having said that, Chair, my colleagues have already pronounced that the bill is not acceptable. Respected. I also want to emphasize some points on that. Chair, we know our mandate. Portfolio committee in relation to oversight in any matter of this portfolio committee. Two, the bill was reported to us last week. In fact, it was introduced to us last week by Honorable Mandela. Today, today, in the name of responses, he also may make another presentation according to whatever was missing in Chair. And Chair, I must say, on issues of oversight, when you read the case, you will doubt, or I doubt that it has gone under that particular stage. Because when you introduce a bill, it needs a thorough and a lot of oversight in terms of consultation with other sectors and structures. I therefore say, secondly, my two colleagues, when they move that, we reject the bill. And also, Chair, when you read the bill itself, it's a tautology of what is doing by the department. It's always emphasizing the operational issues on administrative part. And I should think on those grounds, Chair, I am therefore convinced that the bill must be rejected right away. And it's us now, Chairwoman, because we have given money for quite a long time, talking, responding, talking. But for now, I support the two colleagues. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any other view? Honorable Damede, Honorable Ramakasa.
I think our police did not basically deal with the reasoning behind the proposed bill before us. If we are saying, I think one of the points that we raised that the commission on armed bill and that was not included before. I think the way the smoke is fast. So the fact that at a particular point there has to be a commission looking into an armed deal, it means that there were loopholes or challenges that we have to deal with and also look at as a committee that plays an oversight. And the point that has been made by a fellow honorable members of this committee to the effect that the department is the one that is responsible for procurement and internal mechanisms in terms of how they go out. You know, we cannot say the department should be the referee and the player at the same time. We are playing an oversight role, and obviously if there are certain things that we pick up in the committee, it is our responsibility to advise Parliament on those issues. I would say the response of the department and what the colleagues are saying that the department is saying of what the bill is proposed is already there. But the question remains, what led to armed bill? And the Honourable Minister has also indicated that the defense has not been reported to the standing committee on defense. And it's something that we must be worried of, not just Russia with the deal. Unless if they were saying that I postponed the bill and also look, and when you consider it later, maybe consider the outcomes of the armed bill, you know, the recommendations, the report and the recommendations thereof. They must not behave like everything is normal, and encouraging what is happening that the department should be helping the players. The fact remains that when they were challenged, we are playing an oversight role, and there's a matter that falls within the department. That has led to the president establishing, or the parliament establishing, a committee to deal or to look into the army. So I'm proposing that we should not just reject the bill outright and say he has made clear that on the basis of what happened previously and what led to the army, you know, necessitated us or him looking into what can be done to close the gap. So I would say now, maybe it's premature to deal with the deal now and say, but let us look at the practicalities and the reason behind it and wait maybe for the armed deal commission to conclude its work and bring its recommendation, and we'll look at them and we revisit the deal at that particular point. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Kamede, you will be followed by Honorable Boyi.
Because of the country. becoming very judgmental. People are going to use a child quite able to do because we are that what the president is doing to present the commission. That commission is already come to a conclusion that what I'm doing to accept a particular, I mean, come with a particular position to do the truth of what happened in that particular procurement process. That is very unfair and I'm very uncertain. So for me, I think what all my other colleagues have said, that we have a lot of this particular matter, we should think this is the view. Parliament has its own capacity. And if Parliament doesn't have its capacity, let it be controlled by Parliament as nothing which has been left in its own capacity for itself to improve. It doesn't really want a new view. Show us in the law. Show us in his capacity, his any other entity in front of Parliament, where to let our own capacity to be able to do our activities. Even if we wait for the outcome of the commission, at the end of the day, what we have to do is what is within the constitution, what is within this act, where does our activities come. And it's not what the view is talking about. It's talking about the circumstances in a particular post that he has to and assume that there's no capacity within the department. For me, that is very unfortunate. And quite true, sir. When it's given for government, there is a security of it. I should take it to contract. And we should be able to say to yourself, which side is going to benefit out of that process? It is those that are sitting on the periphery who are backing, or the even in the arms coalition, it would be better to see private companies fighting which company is the best company. And if ever your manager is within the department, then you see that the Parliament doesn't even have its own capacity to improve. It's just up to monitor that procurement process. So at the end of the day, the legislative body that is supporting the legislation, this particular institution will never be able to do its own responsibility. It will turn itself into a commercial sector, which is one of the biggest problems that is confronted with the Arms Trade Commission. That where politicians got involved in procurement processes, this type of problem arises. When we were looking for politicians to come and account about what has been going on in the procurement processes, many of them find themselves that they've been having their fingers within that particular process. And that is very dangerous for a body which is being put together, which is called Parliament, for itself to become a legislative body. It doesn't conform to politics, it's just running after chasing people who are being procurement. And getting involved with business people, and then there are few business people that are seated here, more than people were able to do a legislative responsibility that has been provided to the Constitution. That's the contract issue that I observe within that particular case, that politicians tell me business people, I mean, business people. And this is what the question I've been going to all the people who have been elected by our cross party, which is coming to see that in Parliament, and they end up being business people. For the future, I will see to that how does the procurement process is happening. It's a long way to come to that I think to my colleagues that for the board, I do want to say that many of the government have not attracted my attention. And it can be that it should be able to borrow the question.
Honorable members, we are going to use this, the 10 minutes. To round up, can we have Honorable Isao first talking, follow Honorable Skotana? We have 10 minutes now to round up. Honorable Mnisi, you still want to? Okay, Honorable Isao?
In terms of the competition by the Parliament advisor, this bill is not unconstitutional at all. It does not conflict with any sections of any legislation. And in fact, it enhances legislation that appears to have a general impact to one that is more specific. And I think that's a very important point raised by the parliamentary advisor, that although it is oversight, it is more of a general nature. And this particular bill addresses the issues of specific issues that we need to address. I think the fact that we have commissions for various things is because of issues with the Parliament, and therefore it is sent to a commission of inquiry,
to deal with it outside the body of parliament, because parliament is implicated in some of those things, or members of the parliament. So we have, even with the armed leaders, the fact that one person was convicted because of the armed leaders of his church. That's a fact. And he was jailed for it. So there is other issues related to that, and it was open for investigation. And so we can go to other commissions as well. I think the issue raised by the parliamentary advisor needs to be considered, and not just put by the side. There's been a reflection on different clauses and its impact on legislation. The issue that we speak about, raised by Honourable Mayman, in terms of policy procurement, issue of acquisition, it's a policy. And the difference between policy enforcement and legislation enforcement is clearly a huge difference between one moves to legislative processes for good reason, that it becomes law and it becomes compulsory for the party to comply, and if it does not comply, it can actually be taken to court for that reason. So the law is actually made for more strict compliance, and of course its consequences for this legislation. And I think this is a very distinct difference between policy of procurement and legislative oversight, where there are specific requirements stated in legislation which the department must comply to. In terms of international best practice, one can look at the UK model. You can look at the most advanced states in the world with the most sophisticated weapons that we have. And they do not have any problem in reporting. This is extremely basic. A name of a project, a name of an item, without any specific technical details being provided. And I think if we look at international best practice, even in Australia and others, as a formality, and it's the right of the parliament, which is the supreme body in this country, is the supreme body in this country that makes the legislation and exercises the oversight over the executive. So what we don't want to know the details of public consumption. That is when there are differences in terms of classification. Is it classified confidential information, to what extent? What can be disclosed? That I think we have to be sensitive to security issues, intelligence issues. I don't have any problem. But to name a certain project and to say a certain armament or something that's being bought, I mean, that's very valid, that's very bizarre. So I think those are issues, and in terms of the projects that were handled before, it's clear that they were overrun and they were shifted, and it has costed this department much more money. And I think that is one of the key issues. It is Project Grammar, Project Portal, Project Swatch, Project Vagrant. All of them have overruns, and we paid more money. And it's our duty, in terms of the PFMA, if a department does not comply, it must motivate why there's a delay, why is there a shifting switch. Why is an overpayment? And this limitation is set by the 15%. If it exceeds that, it needs to come to our attention for investigation and oversight of this department. So I don't feel that there's any issue of contribution, there's any issue of unconstitutionality. Moreover, it is one that will bring greater oversight and make it compulsory on a department to comply and not to decide on its own to submit a report or not to its submit. And that's a fact. We've been here, I've been here for the past 2.5 years, and I don't have no sign of such a report coming forward for our committee to have oversight on. And I think that's a serious oversight on our side, and that we need our entities and departments to report on matters that are important to us as Parliament representing this country. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You have followed my understanding is that honourable members, the constitutionality is not a matter of conflict now. So that is a general agreement on that one. Honourable Escosana?
No, sir, thank you very much. My colleague has said a mouthful on the internet. Now, what I want to emphasize is on the level of when we talk about this, it's not a matter of behavior dealing with this thing. We are content based and we are debating and we are participating as members of the leader. Therefore, there is nothing that we have seen which is abnormal within the department. I don't know. unless we say there are issues there and there. But when you say things are abnormal, then which means there is no movement at all. On the basis to say we behave as if things are normal. Well, what is abnormal? But sir, I should think we saw this matter as we have indicated that we reject the being for now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Minier, or you will be the last one on this matter. And then we move to the next step in terms of the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to briefly deal with the 60 arguments. The Honourable Member said that he has come across anything that is working at all. I would ask the Honourable Member to accept the word that morning. Is that the fourth thing that has come for a period of 5 years, may they inform about what funding the Department of Defense is preparing? So may they inform about whether there are schedule slips on particular armaments in the project? And may they inform about whether there were cost overruns on particular armaments projects? Despite that, Parliament supported the defense budget for 5 years. That chair is at home. Let me now deal with six.
Honorable Minister. Honorable Minier, can John? Can you just directly respond to what you are supposed to respond to so that you should be satisfied that we exhausted this?
So that the department can take timeless action to deal and deal with those problems before the end of a particular financial year. And I've also measured to think very clearly that the problem here is you cannot have oversight when you have no sight. So apart, this information is simply not disclosed to Parliament. Parliament is not aware of the fencing acquisition projects, where they are operating on, and schedules. So they just cannot say.
On a point of order.
The first argument is
yeah.
You see, what I remember is 42 million. There's the MCACC, and the MCACC provides a public sector policy. I don't know what that means. They don't give details of all the acquisitions that are taking place. And he knows what I'm talking about. Or he said that they've been reported to Parliament. So what does it mean? I say that he wrote the thing.
Thank you very much. Honorable Minia, you are going to your fifth and sixth point. You had 6 points and then you committee must ask itself whether it's true that the department is reporting or is reporting. Is that, is it because there is no legislation or is it because it's lack of capacity on the department? Because you are dealing with the legislation there and they will not say that. Honorable Menia, just round up. I'm going to honorable members, we will now move to the next step. The I think in terms of constitutionality, honorable members, they agree, but the critical question, having identified all the weaknesses and the threats, both in Parliament, in the Department, do we really need legislation, or is it a question of capacity? Now, honorable members, we will not allow any commission to hold you ransom before its completion. That the question of the commission, it will fall out. Now, what we should do at this stage, I'm going to formally table the desirability of this bill and ask by show of hands for those who support the bill and those who do not support the bill. Can we start by show of hands and say those who support the bill? Honorable Sal, Honorable Menier, Honorable Ramakata, DA, and EFF. Can we then see by show of hands if those who do not support the bill? Honorable Bongo, Honorable Skosana, Honorable Nisi, Honorable Gamede, we have a non-voting member here, Honorable Boy. Honorable members, the bill is not desirable. Our meeting is adjourned. We'll adopt the report next week. Thank you, with the honorable member. Thank you very much.